How Long Gone, Chris Black coming to you live from J. Crew World headquarters here in Manhattan. Jason, how are you feeling?
I'm actually not feeling very well. I'm feeling kind of nauseous.
Okay, so what's the problem? Is your tummy hurting?
That is one way to call nausea, is tummy hurting. If you want to degrade it like that, if you want to minimize my struggle like that, you can.
I do. My stomach's hurting as well because I just had to listen to 6 minutes and 30 seconds of Kendrick Lamar rapping. But hopefully I'll feel better as we get to talking.
Yeah, my tummy does not hurt. I do feel like it's a will they, won't they vomit during this podcast kind of flavor.
Okay.
I don't know. I think it may be dehydration or something. I don't know what it is. I just chugged a bunch of liquid IV. Hopefully that helps.
You should try drinking water every day. It really helps for dehydration.
Is this gonna be how it is the whole hour?
Is this how it's gonna fucking be?
I feel like Kendrick right now, and you're the Chubbs in my ear. You're a little Chubbs housefly buzzing around in my ear. I don't even really think you're gonna pop off like that.
you're talking crazy, but we know you ain't really about it. No, I'm sorry that you're feeling nauseous. I would say you don't have a nice ice cold Seagram's ginger ale. That's what you need.
No, I don't. It could be allergy related. Carolyn got these beautiful flowers in the house, but I feel like...
Oh, yeah. Throw those away. Throw those away. That happens to me. That happens to me sometimes. The flowers look good, but they be hurting.
They look good and they smell good. And then I don't know what they're called, but they're the kinds that they have like a long stem and they're closed. And then one day they open up into these big kind of orchid-like things, whatever. They smell good. But the pollen, they're just lousy with pollen. So much fucking pollen.
Do you have?
It fucked up one of my white tees.
Oh, yeah. No. I fucked up many white tees. It's a lily, I believe, is what you're talking about. My favorite flower. It's white, and it has a little orange kind of in the middle that you get all over your white tee.
Damn.
Is that what you're talking about?
Pause, but yeah, it is.
Yes. Lilies are my personal favorite. They smell great. But they do, once they get past a certain point, it does the same thing to me. It kind of makes my eyes water and I feel funny.
I'm so glad that I opened up about my struggles that I'm going through, because you may have saved me.
I am too. Yeah, just throw those things away. Just throw them away.
And also, since Carolyn's out of town, I could have been throwing them away days ago.
You could have thrown them away. Yeah, you should throw away a bunch of shit. See what happens. You know what I'm saying? Just test the water.
Carolyn wishes I would.
Just throw away all that shit. No, that's a real issue. So I'm glad that you. I am glad that you spoke up about it.
You know what? Just not unlike BetterHelp. Just by talking about it. I feel a little bit better, you know?
Maybe you
even
should...
though the pollen is still infiltrating my nervous system,
yeah,
and causing my body to kind of destroy itself from the inside out, I feel a little bit better.
Well, maybe, yeah, I mean, maybe you should take a Claritin. Have you thought about that?
I took one.
Okay, good.
I took one.
Okay.
I love my folks over at Claritin.
Okay, so it hasn't kicked in yet. All right, well, much like a OxyContin, it might take 30 or 40, you know, to kind of hit the bloodstream. So we'll stay tuned for that and see how you're feeling.
And you already know I don't have an empty stomach. I'd be eating.
You already know I had a croissant this morning.
I have not eaten yet today. Don't worry. But I ate a lot yesterday. Real talk. Shout out to nuts.com. They sent me a new pack.
What? You got a nuts.com plug?
Yeah. Gossamer, the marijuana magazine. Oh, they did a 420 munchie kit drop.
Oh,
with
never
nuts.com.
Mind.
I think David Cho got one as well, but you got to go to one of those Google forms.
Oh, and fill it out.
And then you do top five nut blends, dead or alive, you know.
That's actually something people want. You know, that's nice. Like nuts.
I agree.
Nuts.com is free of charge. We're not being paid. Nuts.com is an amazing website. And as a person who doesn't need nut in bulk,
the user journey,
but it's just everything about it, the name, the logo, the service, the amount of nut you can get. I mean, you can get fucking, you know, you can get 10, you can get 10 pounds of fucking raw almonds. Now, I don't know what you're using those for, but I like to know that it's available.
I make my milks out of it. Yeah. The chocolate covered pretzels.
Okay.
I was going. Don't, that's not what I really be eating on the normal, but
those are so. Oh.
They're a little too salty.
Oh,
in a good word.
Those are.
Get them away from me.
Those are delicious. Delicious.
Yeah. Anyways, I'm going to be feeling good. The other thing that's looming is in 2 hours, I have a Pilates class.
Mm-hmm.
And I could barely kind of get through the dog walk this morning without wondering if I was going to evacuate my stomach.
Speaking of,
in between two Kias.
Speaking of nut.com, it's time for you to nut up and go get your little stretch on. Okay? Like, you can't. The thing is, Jason, if you're a real alpha, which I know you are, you can't let anything affect your performance. You know what I mean? You can't let these pesky allergies kind of inhibit what you're able to do physically, mentally.
Just ever.
Or emotionally.
Not ever.
No, being sick is unfortunately not an option, as you know. And I haven't been sick in 5 years.
Sir, yes, sir.
You know, I haven't been sick. I can't remember the last time I've been sick. You know, if you do 100 push-ups, you'll feel better.
Yeah, if we had a Patreon, I would put all the one episodes where you have COVID on it. I would put a little asterisk on there.
The episodes when I have COVID, exactly. I might have COVID, but it's not affecting my performance. It's affecting my tone of voice, maybe, but it is not affecting my performance. I showed up for every podcast sick as a dog because I'm really about
it. That's true. And that does not affect your performance. You there, you show up. The voice is a little different. It happens to everyone, not just you. I could tell when any podcaster has COVID on the mic. But it's more so, we could tell when you're looking at emails on the podcast, though. But
well, that's fine. But sometimes
that's alpha stuff.
Sometimes I need to look at emails because people will be boring. What, you know, I never do it when it's just me and you. I'll say that right now. I'll say that.
Okay. Well, turn it around. I'm back.
That's no joke. But sometimes you get these motherfuckers in here and they just ain't doing it for me. I get something urgent. I got to look. It's urgent. Like, I got to make money. Like, there's jobs to be done.
No, that's true.
There's jobs to be done.
There's slacks to be slacking. And when Jacob Knoll is talking about his protein macro stack, you're like, I'm seated. I'm here for it. I'm all good. And then if somebody else is talking about, you know, what's a subject that a guest brings up where you start kind of dozing off?
I mean, there's so
many. Start separating.
There's so many. I can't even begin. Actually, no. I mean, all joking aside.
Like charities?
Well, we don't talk about that. Most people are pretty good, but it's still.
Of course.
Email is, I mean, is it? It's crazy to be looking at my computer screen recording this podcast and not looking at Twitter and email. You know, that's the thing. It's like really difficult for me, and I know that's a problem. But it is tough.
Oh, okay.
Like if I mean, damn,
looks like we're both sharing.
Yeah, we're both sharing. Well, we should. I mean, did you have a chance to listen to this Kendrick Lamar West Coast drivel, or were you busy feeling nauseous?
I did both. I listened to it while possessing nausea. I don't know if I plan on adding it to my Spotify playlist, but I liked it a lot more than you did, which is, the bar is low for that.
I mean, it's 6.5 minutes long, which is insane. And the thing about Drake, whether you like him or not, whether his abs are cool sculpted, you know, all that stuff might be true, but at least he can make a diss song that you actually want to listen to again. Like, Push Ups is a song that you listen to. This Kendrick Lamar song you listen to once, unless you're a nerd who goes on genius.com, because it's boring and bad. And he does too many little voices. He's like his fucking cartoon character.
I feel like
Minnie Mouse on the intro.
I feel like Kendrick, he may transcend the West Coast rapper trope. I think he's a global artist at this point, but despite him wearing the Cortezes and repping his set. But
no, bro, if you're a blood that wears Cortezes, I'm sorry. And you rap. I mean, I don't make the rules.
You heard it here first. You should put that on your fucking strategist. I'm looking for an affordable shoe as a member of the Blood Gang. I'm looking for an affordable shoe. I've got a wedding coming up this summer. Got to be under 200 if you can. You know, money's kind of tight right now.
Of course.
I'd love any help if you could, Chris Black.
Check if you just check out, there's a red patent leather Cortez on the Nike website right now that I think would be perfect for your suit supply tuxedo. I think that would be absolutely phenomenal to kind of put those two together. No, but this song will make its rounds as the day continues, and I can't wait to see people say it's good when it's not. But well, that's the story of my life.
I think that he is entering a little bit of Eminem territory.
Mm.
Whether or not he is the greatest rapper alive, it just comes off a little too theatrical, and he's trying too hard, and you just don't want to listen to it. Like, I listened to it And it is sort of a masterclass in wrapping a little bit. It's got a lot of layers. You probably have to spend some time with it to get all of his little references and puns and movements and time signature changes and voices, and his ventriloquism work must be stupendous. But it's almost anything but a rap song. It's like a soliloquy from Hamilton or something like that. Yeah. And I don't even know what soliloquy means exactly, but it felt right when I said
that. That's dead ass, Jason. I think you nailed it. This shit sounds like Hamilton. That's the problem. This shit sounds like Hamilton. And that is not what we want from anyone, really.
But like a really good version of Hamilton, which is me telling you, this is a really good version of a chili dog. You're like, I don't care. It's still a chili dog.
It's a best of the worst situation. But we'll see. I mean, I like that he put it out on YouTube. I don't know if it's on streaming services yet. So that's something to watch from the business side for my billboard.biz subscribers.
But also, another Hamilton esque person is also Drake, and I think the whole point of a diss song is, yes, you want to have it be bumpable in the club, and you want to have return customers and repeat business. You want to have people playing it all over the place and signal boosting it, but you also want the person that you are directing this ire towards, you want it to live rent-free in their head. You want all the little things saying.
That's true.
To have, he wants Drake to be listening to it on his airplane and say, like, God damn it, this son of a bitch, he's too good.
This is professional wrestling, though, and that's why I need a little more pizzazz, personally. But anyway, we do have a guest today, Jason. I'm a longtime fan. Singer-songwriter Pete Yorn is joining us. He's put out countless records over the last years. They're all pretty great. I think he lives in LA, so let's tap in. It's morning for him too.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, Jersey boy, hopefully he's in LA. We need to talk Cali. All right, let's give him a buzz.
Hey Jason, we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on. You're eating at restaurants you don't want to eat at all the time to appease myself and others. But when it comes to your health, there's no compromise. So don't go back to that one doctor who used your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines, their family group chat, their crossword puzzles, just because they're available right now or because they take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. And you can search by location, availability, and insurance, so literally no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know.
ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors very close to you and instantly book appointments with them online. Just like when I'm looking for new shoes on my sites, you can filter specifically, see which doctors take your insurance, located near you, maybe find a doctor that's far away from you for personal reasons you don't want to disclose.
I use ZocDoc, and you should too.
Go to ZocDoc.com/howlong and download ZocDoc for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/howlong. ZocDoc.com/howlong.
How Long Gone is brought to you by Nutrafol. As you know, hair thinning is quite complicated. Like your skin, hair is a reflection of your health. And internal factors can impact the way your hair looks, feels, and most importantly, grows. Nutrafol's whole body approach multi-targets underlying root causes like stress, hormone fluctuations, and nutrient gaps for visibly thicker, stronger hair.
Go ahead, give it a tug. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth suppy, with over 1 million people seeking thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with considerably less shedding. Thank God. Take the first step to visibly thicker, healthier hair for a limited time. Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month's subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HOWLONG, all one word. Find out why over 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists and professional stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol. I got Raf on the nut.com promo code how long. That's Nutrafol.com promo code how long.
You guys have a cool podcast. I was getting messages. I don't know how a couple people knew I was going to be on. Maybe they know you guys or
Yeah.
You previewed it or something, but they're like, yeah, I heard you're going to be on this podcast. Can't wait. I was like, oh, sweet. Awesome, man.
Wow.
We teased it a little bit, you know, for the heads, but I think they would have to get the clues. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The only thing I did was I had to drive from the east side to the west side of Los Angeles yesterday. And I pulled up some PD on the Spotify. I took a photo, a classic dashboard,
mm-hmm.
what I'm listening to, Instagram story photo. We've all been there. And then like pulling the slot machine, the replies just started cranking in. Oh my God, Pete's going, you know, my brother's losing it. Everyone's like, oh my God, I used to listen to that in high school. Not to make you feel old, but I'm sure some of, you know, the word got out. But yeah, that is cool. I'm glad. So you haven't listened to this podcast. You're just hearing third party info.
Well, no, you know, I'll be honest. I hadn't heard of, I don't listen to many podcasts.
Smart.
I've listened to some, like, when I've been in like a dark, deep hole that like I found that maybe help me, you know, sure, like that sort sure, of thing. But like,
you've you're saying you've listened to some self-help podcasts. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And then I kind of like, when I come out of it, like I'll get like a reminder to listen to one and I'm like, nah, I'm not, I'm not getting back into that. I'm fine. but your guys came onto my radar, you know, from Claire, and I was like, oh, this is cool. And I heard some good things about it. And then I actually, you know, I like to be somewhat prepared coming into something from my own nervousness, you know, like not wanting to look like a total idiot. But I listened to a few. I'm like, well, these guys interviewed some amazing talents. You know, you guys have a crazy list on there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to a little bit Jay Maskus. I listened to a little Jeff Tweedy. I listened to a little bit of Maya Hawk to mix it up. I listened to a little bit of Hozier.
Oh, Hozier's surprisingly great.
Yeah, some of these people are able to just step up and like go toe-to-toe with you guys and the randomness and all that, you know. And I'm like, you know, I just hope I could be a good guest for y'all, you know. So I'm trying to,
well,
make a nice
some
day.
Of them are able to step up, and you all the examples of episodes you listened to were all winners in their own special way. And they all stepped up to the plate to match us, except for Jay Maskus. You know, and there's always one out of the bunch, but that Jay Maskus, we'll call it interview in air quotes, because it was not really a conversation at all. It was more outsider art, but that's become an infamous episode of like, what the flying fuck is going on here for 1 hour? If you could make it through the end.
To give you a little background, postscript on that, he talked shit about all the restaurants in the town that he lives in being bad. And it became a Boston Globe news story and then continued to build until it made it a stereo gum. So I don't think Jay is welcome in his local pizza place anymore, which I don't feel responsible for, but I don't feel good about either.
Mm. Does he still live like in Amherst, like up in Manhattan?
Amherst, yeah.
Yeah,
well, the Amherst Gazette caught wind of the episode and they've sort of blackballed him from every local eatery. Yeah. But they don't, the thing that they don't realize is that if every restaurant in the entire city has a full anti-Jay Maskus smear campaign, he's only going to like that. It's only going to make him stronger, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He's like a black hole.
Mm-hmm. Gives him fuel.
And maybe you're talking to Tweedy and you got, there was some element of like, not wanting to leave someone a bad review for a restaurant or like, you know, but then you have like a social responsibility maybe. And then I was thinking about it because I've been there where like, I feel bad, you're going to hurt someone's business. And, you know, it's got to be really, really exceptionally bad to want to do that.
Mm.
And, you know, and I guess it's everyone has a different opinion, I guess. So it's really just a matter of opinion. But I had an Uber driver back from LAX a few weeks ago. And he picks me up and he's in a sweet BMW, his brand new car. He's like, all right. And he's driving me home like we were going like the Indy 500. The guy's flying and it's like 11 at night. And there were a lot of cars on the road, but I was scared shitless in the back seat.
Sure.
It was nice BMW. And I'm like white knuckle. And I'm at this point, I'm like, man, should I tell him to slow down? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, but I don't know, we might die. And I'm like, he's driving pretty good though. Like, yeah, like every movie he's making, like I kind of get it. Like I get it, and it's really aggressive. He was like an Eastern European dude, you know, like young. And he was just flying, and I finally didn't say nothing. And then I'm like, should I give him like a review? Like, what if he crashes with someone in the future? Like a bad. And he had like, you know, 55 star reviews. Like everyone gave him reviews.
Yeah.
And I gave him a 5-star review. The only thing I did when I got out of the car, I went, hey man, be careful out there. And I walked away.
You gave him, you, I mean, if you go and you look and you see that no one else has complained about the speed, then you feel like a pussy. You know, that's the problem, and you can't really respond.
Well, that's the trade-off. It's because you're in the back of the car, you're looking at your phone, you're looking at your watch, you're looking at his ways, and you're like, it normally takes me an hour and 45 minutes to get home. This son of a bitch is going to do it in under 20. And you're like, I could die. So you're like, get home in 20 minutes, die, look like a pussy in front of the stranger. But I have the solution for you, Pete. I've been in this situation many a time. If you give somebody a review of 3 stars or lower, you will never be matched with them again. So you can leave a 3-star review and then in the comments. So it's not going to ding him like a 1-star. It's not going to really fuck him up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can leave a review saying, cool guy, great car, super clean, drove too fast, and then you're done.
Oh, okay.
And he can live to fight it. He'll live to drive another day, and you'll never have to be in the backseat of his M5 again. And then lastly, we have a great driver in LA. You just give him a text, he'll come and pick you up from the airport. Really nice setup, super pro, and it's usually cheaper than the Uber. We'll talk offline afterwards. I'll give it to Claire.
Good to know.
We'll share Vic's info. We'll share Vic's info with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, getting home from LAX is scary in general. So I'm glad that you made it. But those new BMWs, did this one have the like in the back seat, it had like a touch screen for the window and shit?
I think it did. It was like a new 7 series. It was like a really nice one.
Oh, okay.
We've hit too many screens. There's too many fucking screens. So that instead of pushing a button to put the window down, it's a fucking touch screen. We don't need that.
Mm.
I don't care how much the car costs.
Yeah, it's one more thing to break too, but just a thing. Yesterday, for the first time, I said someone sent me some story out of Norway how like, and I'm not even this guy so much, but it does worry me. I have a little girl, so I like worry about the future. Mm-hmm. And when she's still pre like internet, but like I'm like, oh shit, when she gets on that, oh my god, all hell's gonna break loose. But you know, it's like kids in Norway, I guess, that were like off of devices for as an experiment for a number of months, and they're all like not depressed. They all are happier and doing better in school. Mm-hmm. And everything like that. And I was like, man, remember that movie? Like, this is extreme version of it, but that M. Night movie, the Village, you know, which you can only see once. But I'm like, it's the first time I kind of like thought it was like be kind of nice and just like get a group, check out, and like go live, you know, off the grid somewhere. Maybe not as kind of, that was extreme, like living in another time, but I'll just take it back to like 1995, you know, like that amount of technology seems okay, but it's hard to manage that. But I kind of, yeah, I might, this might be my last podcast and I check out, guys.
this is it, you're done.
Well, I was gonna ask you, during COVID, did you duck out to the desert, Simon Rex style?
Well, I don't know what Rex was doing, but I was in the desert.
during COVID, he bought a spot in Joshua Tree and then kind of fixed it up, and now he lives there full time. But I see a little. You're not a doomsday prepper, but we're off grid adjacent, maybe.
Yeah, well, we were living in Santa Monica, like literally on the street where all the ambulances come through to go to the emergency room at St. John's Medical Center. And I never mind. I was always like, oh, it's cool. If we have a problem, we're right here, you know?
Yeah.
I never really noticed it.
Great way to look at it.
Yeah. But then, you know, during that, when you didn't know what was going on, you didn't know, you like someone walks by your freaking house and you could catch it. It was like, I don't know. We got to get the hell out of here. And my wife was the first one. It's like, let's go. You know, luckily we had, my family had bought a house in the desert that isn't used that often back in like 2000. And so like, wow. You know, I was a lot younger then. I got to enjoy it a bit. And I was like, we're going to squat there. And so we just went and squatted it out there. And we stayed there for 9 months. And it was
9 months.
Yeah. It was as good as it can be, you know?
So you're like, I call dibs on the Coachella house. And everyone's like, yeah. Have fun, bro. Have fucking fun.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah.
Okay. So, you're back in LA now.
Oh yeah. We're back.
Are you historically a Santa Monica guy?
I moved to California on May 16th, 1996, after graduating Syracuse. And then
go Cuse.
I was living up in like, Doheny, you know, like up in the hills behind the Roxy up there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was living like up and down the hill a little bit, a few different, and then I kept moving further west.
depending on how things are going, up or down the hill a little bit. I like that.
So first apartment in LA above the Sunset Strip, not an affordable part of town to live in. How are we swinging this, Chief?
Oh no, I was lucky.
You didn't have the record deal yet, right?
No, I had big brothers, and I followed them out to California, and I was a little brother, and they were like, mm-hmm. you can stay in the guest house, and so I was lucky that way. I was able to just stay in a guest house and just be the little shit brother staying there, like writing songs.
Amazing.
Like, check out this tune. But we moved further west as the years went on. Like, first it was there, then it was like Brentwood. And then eventually when I got engaged and married, we moved to Santa Monica. And then now I'm in the Valley. Now we wanted like more after the pandemic. I was like, we needed to get space, and everything was so expensive. And the best situation we could find was in the Valley, which is awesome, and we love it here. And so it's cool.
Wow, you're a Valley convert.
I know, and a lot of my friends are too.
We talking Studio City, Sherman Oaks? You don't have to say exactly, but yeah, you're on the West. I'm in Glendale myself.
Oh yeah, I went to that mall out there. I didn't even know it was there for the first time. I couldn't believe it. It's beautiful.
Americana.
It's beautiful.
I'm like, is this brand new? And they're like, no, it's been here a while. And I was like, this is amazing.
Makes the Grove look like New Jersey, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, I was really blown away. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll be seeing Challengers there soon.
It is pretty nice. It is pretty nice. I mean, I don't... I guess also, if you grew up on the East Coast, so did I, you don't grow up with the outdoor mall thing, so it's still kind of... shocks the system in a delightful way every time you get to stroll one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that one especially, I just remember being kind of blown. It's got this huge fountain. They're all people having a good day. And I was just, there were some high-end stores and luxury goods to browse. It was nice.
You can get a Wetzel's Pretzels, buy a Tesla, get robbed at the YSL store. It's all there. Get a juice cleanse.
You can do it all.
Yeah, my mall in Jersey was the Willowbrook Mall in Wayne, New Jersey. And it was a good mall, but I remember the fancy mall was in Short Hills. It was called the Short Hills Mall. And like that was where.
Yeah.
There was like a Benetton there. I remember I was like, whoa, as like, you know, like a 10-year-old kid, like, you know, and like maybe my brothers there, where they'd be like seniors in high school or in college, and they take me as a little kid. And I remember at the girls seemed prettier and the store seemed fancier. And I was like, this is cool. And they had an A&W. I never heard of that before. And,
oh, not the A&W.
Okay, so all the top of the line stuff.
A&W. Very impressionable as a kid.
Best hot dogs in New Jersey were available at the Short Hills Mall. I got it.
Okay, do you have like all the boys from back home who kind of call you Hollywood and clown you for being a Cali boy, or have they all hopped on board and they're like, you know what, Pete's got it figured out?
The funny thing is, most of my best friends from college and even growing up like moved to California. Everyone had this kind of California romance, you know, and so many of them live out here now. And so that's fun. One of my good friends lives in Florida. But other than that, yeah, like all my boys are out here. One of my best friends was living in New York for a while, and he moved out during the pandemic to get more just air.
sure.
So it sounds like you guys are like HBO's Entourage, and you're the Mark Wahlberg character, and all the bros come out with you from Queens to take Cali over, almost around the same time that Entourage was happening.
Yeah, like in 19
your life was a movie
in 1990. The 90s were fun, you know. I sound like Paul McCartney. The 60s were hurly burly. No, it's like, but it's you know, I look back now and it's like I snap my fingers. I'm like, what the heck happened? It was, you know, I went to the studio the other day at my friend Jackson's house, and he has this little VHS little TV, and he always puts VHS in on silent while we're recording. In the studios, I mean, it's a little room. It's a home, you know, little, it's like
set the vibe
room. But he had Swingers on when I, and he's probably like 10 years younger than me. Maybe even, no, he's even more than that. Man, shit, I'm old. All right. But he had Swingers on, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, whoa, like I said, everything about this movie is very accurate except the swing dancing. Like I never got into the swing dancing thing, but
yeah,
but I think it was a thing.
That's a step too far, but it was a thing.
It was a thing.
It was a thing. It was really happening, guys. It was really, people were swinging in LA. You were hanging out too far on the west side, though.
Everything was spot on. No, at that point, I was out that way. I was hanging around, you know, going out a lot, and we'd all drive. Everyone would drive.
You were swinging over to Los Feliz?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. But
okay.
My point is that, yeah, that movie's a good, it was a good movie. But where, how'd I get on that? Remind me. Oh, Entourage. No, I don't, I think I've seen one episode of that show, but now my point is like, I never go out. I don't do anything. I said to the other day, I had to go to my friend's house to go like finish writing a song we were working on. And he's like, Pete, could you come by my place in the evening? And I was like, I really had to think about it. I was like,
nighttime?
Oh man. Like, well, I said, all right, I could do between 6 and 8, I guess. 6 and 8. And he's like, all right, cool. And he's busy as heck. I mean, it's like, whatever, I gotta make it work for this guy. But I went over there, and he lives close too. He lives like in the valley, like 10 minutes away. and the what helped it more is I knew my wife and daughter were going to be out at some dance thing at the school. So I was like, well, they're going to be out, so all right, I guess I can go use that time. So I went, and then I was laughing about it with him. I'm like, you got me out. But yeah, I never go out.
No, at all. It's okay. I don't.
So
I don't
going
blame
out
you.
To you is I went to my friend's house in Toluca Lake for an hour and a half at 6 p.m. And then you're like, 7:45, I start turning into a pumpkin. I better get back.
I got to get home.
Sun might be coming down soon.
Valley Village.
Valley Village, okay.
Are you familiar with this new reality show called The Valley, Pete? Have you seen this?
You know, Nat, I might have heard of it, but I haven't seen it. I think I've heard of it, but I haven't. What is it, like Real Housewives of the Valley or something? Or?
No, it's basically like characters from a few cast-off characters from the show Vanderpump Rules and their friends, but they all are basically like older and now live in the valley, and it's all about like that. It nothing really happens like most great shows, but it's like it's really valley focused, and I feel like it's giving the valley some shine. You know, and I think it could be good for business.
The Valley is great. I was like, I was never anti-Valley, you know, like, but I will say growing up seeing the movie Valley Girl, which I love, was one of my favorite movies. But I remember Nick Cage, his character was a bit snobby about the Valley. I remember there's a line, he's like, there's a party. And his friend is like, one thing, it's in the Valley. And he's like a Hollywood, like, punk, you know, whatever. And he goes, oh, I don't want to go to the Valley. And I remember always thinking about that as a kid, like, oh, what's wrong with the Valley, you know? But I literally now I live very close to the epicenter, so I'm told, of you know, where like kind of Valley Girl mall culture came out of,
was,
you know,
birth
the old Sherman Oaks Galleria, which is now like more of a movie theater and like a, you know, like a offices, but back in the day it used to be one of those full-on traditional malls where
it was, know, a spot.
It was the spot, and I, you know, I live very close to that now, and I kid my daughter, who's only 8, but I'm like, yeah, she's technically a Valley Girl, you know?
Technically, I don't want to split hairs, but you know, technically. You should check out the show. I want to see if you recognize anyone from the Whole Foods. You know what I mean? Like, I want to see if you recognize anyone from just being around the neighborhood.
Yeah, I don't know if that'll happen. It's big. It's a big area, but that show, the Vanderpump. So this is a spinoff of the Vanderpump Show, which is a spinoff of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So I used to watch some of the Beverly Hills. But I never watched the Vanderpump Rules show.
You weren't captivated by 10 people who work at a bar?
I might have been. But you know, like any of these things, if you get into it, if you start watching it, they suck you in. At first you're like, what is this show? And then also you're like,
yeah,
you just get like locked in, you know. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with reality television is, and the Vanderpump universe is the great example, is that Vanderpump Rules was really good when they were like 22. And on coke and fighting and having sex. And now it's in this place where they're all just kind of like, they have money now, you know what I mean? And things are just kind of boring. But then the Valley is a salve because they're in their early 40s and they're blowing up their lives. You know what I'm saying? So it's like a nice, the middle ground is where you don't want to be. You want to be getting divorced, hating, you know, having kids, or you want to be drunk and on drugs. The in-between part is just not what
we're
looking
for. It's not good television.
Those shows thrive on a bit of chaos and
yes,
so people could see like, oh good, my life isn't as shitty as theirs, or I'm not as crazy as them. And I get it, that's a human, you know, trait. So
it's hard to build a TV show around like, yeah, we got the guy coming out to look at the HVAC today. And then, you know, yeah, we'll find out after the commercial if they successfully fix the air conditioning.
Yeah, it's a little,
you know, it's not a ton of drama.
Yeah, I literally have that. I literally have that after you guys. I got to wait around for like 4 hours for someone to come here. A big window. It was a 12-2 window, and then I get the text. It's a 12-4 window.
Sure.
And I'm like, you just tacking 2 hours on me on that? All right. Luckily, you know, I don't really like to go anywhere anyway, so it's fine for me. I'm like that old school, like, you know, maybe Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm that guy now.
Yeah, no.
You know?
We all get there. I mean, that's where we're all headed, whether we like it or not.
Damn.
I don't even drink anymore.
Fucking... Do you smoke weed? The best way to learn a language? Immersion, living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way, and that's with Babbel. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off your list with Babbel.
Chris and I are going to the country of Georgia in a month or so, and they have a very unique language, and I will be using Babbel to try and just get a little bit of action so I can know how to order my cold brew lattes and things like that in a way that's actually science-based. Don't spend hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Use Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons. They're handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new lingo in as little as 3 weeks.
Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/howlong. Get 55% off at babbel.com/howlong, spelled babbel.com/howlong. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Babbel.
No, and I always laugh now that they have like Willy Wonka fucking candy store weed places everywhere. I smoked so much weed. I used to joke my record Day I Forgot was called Day I Forgot because it was the day I forgot to smoke weed because I would smoke every day, you know, all the time. And then at some point I just lost interest in it. I think I probably was like tweaking me out, you know, and I was like, oh, I gotta stop. And then I just lost the interest. I mean, once in a while I would do it. I'm not against it. I could be around it. It's not that.
Sure,
thing,
sure, sure.
I think I'm more just into preserving my body now. Just like, I just want to be healthy.
Let's take it back to 96. Can you describe your bong
in 96? Oh my god, there was like a giant, you know, 6-foot glass graphics type bong, you know. It was only big bongs.
Only big bongs. He said big bongs.
Okay,
only.
Well, follow-up question. I ask everyone this question: did you learn how to light a lighter with your feet, or did you have to have a friend light it for you? Because I know you don't have that big of a wingspan.
The six foot was more of, you know, like a party like thing, you know.
The fellas come over.
And I was never really smoking bong hits alone. You know, I'd usually be with my friend. I had one friend who moved out, my best friend's in second grade in Jersey. And he lives out here now, and I don't see him as much as I'd like to, but back then I was living up to Haney, and he showed up. He's just like, I'm moving out. And he moved out. He's from Brooklyn, but then moved to my town in Montville in Jersey in second grade.
Turtle.
And he had an apartment like across from the Four Seasons, kind of like on Doheny, you know, down towards like Beverly. And we would just smoke weed all day back then. That's all we would do. But then it was more like a 3-foot glass, you know?
Sensible.
Okay.
Scale it down a little bit.
It was like a 3-foot.
Let's get real, guys. Yeah. Bring it down to a 3.
I think it scares me. Sometimes I think, I'm like, God, I worry about that shit.
I forget how, even though bongs are obviously easy to mock and they do represent stoner culture in the worst way, they do get you fucking lit. They work. And that's the thing that I always forget about. Like how I think back to when I used to smoke weed and how much more high you get from smoking
a
bong.
It's an efficient delivery system.
Yes, it's an efficient delivery system.
The deal now, though, is weed is so much more consistent and strong. It's much stronger now. Like now, I remember before I stopped, like I would just be like, I'm good. Like I don't need to smoke. Yeah. We used to smoke whole joints like all day long. Like, but now it's like, you just need like a couple hits of it and you're good. And also you could pick, you never knew what you were getting back then. It was like, some days we'd have like freaking nickel bags with like stems and seeds and it smelled like Raid. And then other days you'd have this big fluffy nugs from like, you know, a magazine, like cannabis cup looking shit. And then
Got the White Widow guy.
You know, the White Widow. And so now it's much more controlled. You know what you're doing, you know. A friend of mine yesterday had some stuff, and I'm like, what's it called? I'm always curious. I'm like, what strain is it? You know, like, what do you, and I was literally standing there getting nice fumes from it in the parking lot, and I was enjoying that, but I'm like, I'm not gonna smoke, but I'll just let it waft into my face a bit. But it was called Randy Watson is the name of the strain, and I was like, Randy Watson from like Coming to America, Randy Watson.
Wow.
And he's like, I don't know. He didn't know what the reference was, but I'm like, it's gotta be. That's amazing. So I sent him the videos of Sexual Chocolate and all that, and then it showed me the bottle, and it's spelled with a Z instead of an S. But it's got to be
that's
named
copy.
After
that's
Randy
just copy. That's just copyright protection. That's just making a little change so you don't get sued. You know.
I like that though. It's a genius name. I love that.
That is really good.
I
like that.
I saw a similar marijuana name. There's a company, I forgot what it's called, but the strain was called Scotty's Mom, and it's from that song Scotty Doesn't Know from. God, what? I don't remember what movie it is, but I think maybe people shouldn't be allowed to make marijuana so easily. There should be more hurdles that people have to pass through. But also, like, why don't I have a weed strain? You know what I mean? If it's that, if it's this easy, how come these people can name weed strains after Coming to America characters but add a Z? This is the stuff I think about, Pete.
You keep doing walking your walk and staying in the zeitgeist, you might get one. There might be one, you know. What's this podcast called? No, what's it called?
How Long Gone.
How Long Gone.
That's a good name. How Long Gone is a good name for a strain. You guys should just launch it or partner with one of the dispensaries, and then you got it. It's good promo these days.
Well, I'm in talks. We actually bleeped it on an episode last week, but I was saying we should invent a strain of marijuana for writers, musicians, called writer's block, and it's specifically
that is good
designed to create you know, like, hey, I've got writer's block, I'll smoke a little bit of this, and then the ideas just start flowing out of me. I just have to figure out how to engineer.
Do you believe in writer's block?
I know you don't. You put out a shitload of records, Pete, so I know you don't, but I mean,
well, I guess I don't believe in writer's block. You just got to do it, right?
I heard something once years ago and I thought it was great. It's like, it's just do it. It's just writer's block, I think, is like your own thing. And it's not real. Like, you could just start writing something and you know, it might be not great or whatever. But if you just keep doing it, you'll get something. And it's always, if you don't do it, then that's writer's block. It's just not doing it.
I think there's writer's block at a certain level when there's maybe a lot of pressure and money. You know, I think that is different than somebody just being like, I'm just not feeling it right now. I think that the pressure can really affect people.
But we also need deadlines.
Yeah. It ain't going to happen if you don't do it. But I will say, it doesn't mean you got to put everything out, you know, on all that. And it's more like do it to do it and then see what you're excited about, you know? But
yeah. You're a Smiths Morrissey guy, right, Pete?
Yes.
Wait, Jason. I have a story.
Oh, Chris, you have a Smiths and Morrissey and Pete Yorn story?
yes, that I've thought about this for years because it blew
Pete's
me
like,
away.
Wow, I'd love to hear this.
It blew me away. So I used to manage a band called Cartel, and they were on Epic Records when you were on Columbia, when Music for the Morning After had just come out, and there was like this conference in New York where certain artists from the labels would play two songs for like the staff, you know, and it was like kind of understood, like you go up there and you play your two singles or whatever, and you went up and played a Smiths cover instead of your own music, and I've always wondered if you remembered that or if you that was something you did all the time.
Was it in a little theater?
Yes.
But did Tommy was still there, Mottola?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember that.
Was it Panic on the Streets of Birmingham?
It was probably, I used to do a little bit of Panic into one of my songs. So it was probably like a teaser intro, but I ended up playing more than a teaser. I played a bunch of it.
I was like, this motherfucker is on one. He doesn't give a shit. He's playing a cover song for the president.
Tommy days. I do remember that. I could picture it actually.
Yeah, it was a weird, we were all, you might've been staying there too. We were staying at the Paramount Hotel, which was close to the, you know, it was always close to the Sony building and like near that theater. I don't remember what theater it was though.
Yeah, I don't know what theater it was, but I could picture it.
But have you played with Johnny Marr or anything?
I met Johnny backstage at it was like a radio Christmas concert where it was like 10, you know, it's 8 bands on it, one of those things. And It was for a radio station in San Diego, and I met Johnny, and he was so nice. And he actually said he liked my cover, and I was like, holy shit. You know, I was like, oh, my God. He was, I don't know if he was just being really nice or meant it, but he was he was super cool. And he was playing with Modest Mouse at the time. And I he just interviewed Isaac, I think, right?
Yeah. We were like, how did that? He's like, oh, I just emailed him. I was like, what? That's not how this works. And I guess it is how it works.
You know, sent him an email and I was like, do you want to make some songs? And he's like, yeah, okay, but I won't. But it's not going to be like Modest Mouse. And then like a year later, he's like, I'm on every Modest Mouse song, but look, I made the album, but I'm not going to go on tour. And then, you know, 6 months later, it's like, okay, we're going on tour. And then he's just like, I'm in Modest Mouse now. But I remember him, Isaac was mentioning he was very good at doing pull-ups for such an older man.
I saw him recently. I saw them. Oh, I told you this, Jason. I saw him open for the Killers like a year ago or 2 years ago. And he was good. Like, it was awesome. And people were like pretty into it, I think. But that's maybe because the Killers are also such, you know, Morrissey Smith's lovers that they kind of know what they're getting into when he opens.
That's a good fit, I think, you know, for a bill. There'd be a lot, because I remember now thinking about seeing those clips with the Killers, then he would come out and play with them and they'd do a Smith's cover. Yeah, I mean, if you're a Killers fan and you know anything of where they come from, there's no way you wouldn't have some reverence for Johnny.
No, that's
and
true
his band,
that's true,
you know?
Have you,
of course,
have you done wild shit? Have you like opened for Bruce or anything?
I've played with Bruce. I played drums.
Yeah,
with him on a crazy version of Rosalita at Carnegie Hall. What? And that came together. That was a blur of how that came together, but it did. And then
because he has a pretty good drummer already.
He does. Well, we Bruce is so great. We were doing a tribute to Bruce. It was like a tribute to his songs, and it was a lot of different artists there, and I got lucky to be a part of it. And then of course, you know, Bruce shows up to that kind of shit. Like he just like, you know, we did one for Neil Young, and that was really fun too, but this one Bruce actually showed up for, and so we all got to jam with him, and I was like, all right, I'll play drums, and we did a crazy Rosalita. But I have a lot of like REM. I grew up with a huge, you know, REM fan.
Yeah,
I got
to
open for them and tour with them. That was like a dream come true. And what record were they working then? It must have been like that record with like Leaving New York, probably that record.
Yeah,
I wanna
say. Okay. Yeah, yeah, sure.
Chris is a big REM head.
I'm an REM head. I mean, I'm from Atlanta, so it's a little bit of a hometown.
Yeah, we got to play
Hero.
We played the Phillips Arena down there. I don't know what it's called now, but
yeah, no, it, yeah, Phil. I mean, that's as big as it gets. I just didn't. It's weird because I didn't like REM in like high school, and I had a few friends that did, and it didn't click until I was in my like early mid 20s, which is so strange now because I can't imagine life without it. Kind of, you know what I mean?
I had this a similar experience with like REM, you know, was a Georgia band, and like maybe it felt close to home for you, so you maybe rebel against it a little bit. Like,
yeah,
for me,
yeah,
it was the same thing with Bruce. Like growing up, it was like 1985, Born in the USA, and I was like all in the Smiths and Cure and probably REM and Clash, and I was like, I don't know what this Born in the USA is, you know, this Jersey guy. But then you come back to it a little older, and you're like, holy shit, how could you not, you know, you know, appreciate this? So sometimes it just takes a minute, you know?
No, it does take a minute. That's the beauty of growing old. You know, you do have some perspective.
Yeah, it's one of the benefits.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, back then when Born in the USA came out, I mean, that was like Taylor Swift level music. So if you're like a cool teenager listening to The Cure and being hot and dark, you're like, this is the most bullshit ass music of all time. Turn this shit off, you know?
Yeah.
I guess Bruce is all right at the end of the day.
The best.
It's hard to remember that music like that was... That was popular music. It's been so long that it's really hard to imagine that.
Back when America was America.
Mm-hmm.
But also, Bruce, do you think Bruce will die if he ever stops playing 5-hour shows every single night of his life? Is it like a Rolling Stone syndrome where as soon as he stops, they stop?
I think there's something to that, you know, for certain type of people, for sure. I think it's important for them to stay. I think most people, it's important to stay active, like use it or lose it. But on the level that they're at, like, it's so ingrained in them, and they're hungry for it. Like I could tell, like Bruce, whatever, he's a guy, I think he loves at the end of the day giving his music to people and getting out there, and he needs it for his soul. It seems like, you know, some people could take it or leave it, you know, they're like, they like making the music for themselves and they would like to be able to like support themselves from it, but they don't need to get out on stage every night. And like, you know, that sort of thing. But some people, like, I feel like they do need it and not in a selfish, even ego way, but I think you do need to have some ego to be a long-term rock star out there, to want to get up there and deal with all that and leave your family you know, you have to have a real commitment to music and people and that whole thing. And if you stop doing it, you might shrivel up and die. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, he also plays, I don't understand all these people playing for 3 hours. I don't get it. Like, I don't, Taylor Swift does it. Bruce does it. Yeah. Several people now do it. And I just, like, that's some like jam band shit I'm not interested in. Like, I want, it's like movies. Like, let's keep it an hour and a half and keep it moving. I don't know if I need 3 hours.
Yeah, I don't personally.
And maybe give me a chair to sit
in. I've left so many shows. I get really impatient. And so like, I lose interest, but I just kind of like, I've walked out of, so I think about shows like my favorite bands I was so excited to see, and I leave like halfway through, and not because they're not great,
same.
But I'll just kind of French exit. I'm like, okay, I'm good, I gotta go. Yeah, and I gotta move on.
Couple follow-up questions for that, for the shows where you French exit. I mean, obviously, you know, you start doing the pro and con in your head, and you're like, all right, parking lot's gonna be a son of a bitch, if I get home and this time I could swing by In-N-Out or whatever it is. You do all the dialogue in your head. How many of these concerts, shows you're going to, are tickets that you pay for out of your own hard-earned money, and how much you made a call and you got the tickets?
This is probably bought tickets for sure. This is also, I don't go to shows now, so it's really this is like, I'm talking about, you know, a long time ago, really, like,
okay.
Like, I as a kid, I remember
you French exited from the world.
I'd be at the Roxy so many times, and I'm like, all right, it's too loud, I'm good, or I saw enough, and I just walk out and wander down the street.
I like that.
Yeah,
I love that.
I do it. I'm a traffic guy. I'm like I took my friend to see Depeche Mode at the Garden, and I like Depeche Mode. You know what I mean? David Coggins. I like Depeche Mode. He's like a head. Like, he's like annotating the set in my ear. Like, I'm learning something. But then when it gets into an hour, hour and a half, I'm like, bro, I gotta go. He's like, yeah, see you later. You know, he stayed for the full 3 hour marathon. But I just couldn't do it. And the show was great. It was like a, you know, it was a all-encompassing kind of performance, but I just couldn't take
hit after hit.
Yeah, I get it. And I don't want to paint like a one-sided picture. There are plenty of shows I stay till the end and I'm like moved. Obviously, I feel something enormously from music and I get a lot out of it. But I'm wondering now that like, I don't really, you know what? A lot of it was, I just get tired. Like, I smoke too much before and drink too much and eat too much, and I get like kind of swagged out midway through. Like the old dead shows, I remember I'd party too hard in the parking lot and I'd be so tired, you know. And you know, the real Grateful Dead with Jerry and stuff, and then I would like,
damn right,
I would, you know, like halfway in, not even halfway in, I'd be kind of like, I sit down, I'm like, all right, I'm just gonna French exit. And that's what I would
once
do.
You sit down, once you sit down, just leave. Like, once you got to sit down, you just got to leave.
Fish,
I kind of think that's
the fish at the Forum. I did the same thing.
As a notorious French exiter, do you like going to shows alone then, or like going to places alone so you don't have to have the baggage?
Rarely. No one cares. I mean, what are they gonna say to me? Like, they're my friends, so they're gonna,
you know. But what if you all like drove in the same car together, say? And you're like, all right, I'm gonna leave now, say? And they're like, you're my ride, bro.
Nah.
Like, it's, I like going places alone so you could slide in and slide out, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
no friction.
Usually I do, but you know, now it was easy once Uber kicked in and all that, to do that. But like, listen, man, I'm sometimes going to French exit my own shows, you know, sometimes like I'll be like,
sure,
ready to just to run off the stage. So, you know, I'm like, it's not that, you know, I'm not like, it's no judgment on the bands or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's not about that at all. It's my own, you know.
I agree with you. 100%. It has nothing to do with how much I like the artist, or if I paid for the tickets or I didn't pay for the tickets. It's just like, at a certain point I just got to go. And that's my approach to life. Similarly, like parties, anything, I'm just like, I got to go. When it's over, it's over.
Yeah, I either get too tired or I get restless. But now, what I was going to say is, now that I stopped drinking, I feel like I have noticed at events, like if I do go to like, you know, maybe it's a dance recital or some sort of other type of simple event, I notice I'm like quick to kind of like find a big joy. I'm kind of like, this is awesome.
Uh-huh.
You know, so maybe the next thing I go to, I might actually tap into that and be like, wow, this is, I have more endurance now. I might act more interest, more attention span, you know, for this sort of thing. So we'll see.
Did you stop drinking for a reason or were you just like, I've had enough?
I had a pretty big surgery last year and I had to, I figured for while I was healing from that, it would be best to not drink. And so I got, you know, a little distance from it. And then after I was like, well, fuck, it's kind of, it feels pretty good, you know, not to. And I wasn't like a crazy alcoholic or nothing like that, but I did need it. I was like, I needed it to get on stage. It was like that sort of thing.
Sure.
And so I was like, I don't want to fucking need this. And I just stopped. And now, you know, it's been so great. It's been amazing. So like, I'm not, I could be around it. I'm not, you know, a 12 step or nothing like that. I could, I could, you know, do whatever, but I just, it's just like really nice right now to not, my brain's better. I feel better and
beautiful.
And I kind of digging it.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was your pre-show ritual? What was the drink that you would have before you go out on stage?
It would depend from night to night, but typically it'd be, tequila or Maker's Mark, depending if it was a Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So it was like odd weeks. Like so they switch the bottle out, and I don't. I wouldn't want to mix them. That'd be bad for me. And then I pivot to beers, and then yeah, just need it. I remember there was this Elvis documentary. Maybe it's This Is Elvis, and like one of his friends is calling him out, like about the pills and all this shit, and he goes. He's like, I he gets all serious and, he's, and sad. He goes, I need him, man. I need him. And it always scared me. I'm like, fuck, man, I don't want to need anything. And I really needed it to get on a stage. I was like, I just kind of got to a place where it was like too fucking crazy to not have it. And so now.
Yeah.
So fuck that. Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fuck it.
I wanted to talk to you about your bros. Have you ever been called a Nepo brother?
I feel like early on, people would try to dismiss my success and my songwriting prowess. They'd try and say, oh, yeah, he just made it because his brothers are powerful Hollywood minions. And I'd be like, fuck y'all, man. Like, you fucking go write one of my songs, man. And yeah, there would be some of that, but obviously not enough. And I'd always think about, well, whatever, like, dude, I know people whose parents are like, you know, fucking superstars who make beautiful records and it doesn't click for whatever reason.
No one cares. It happens. It's often happens.
And so listen, I just consider myself, I'm not going to apologize for who I am and where I come from, which is, I know where I come from. And you guys probably know where I come from. I come from fucking New Jersey and my brothers came out here and happened to kick some ass. And I just followed them because I was going to follow them anywhere they went anyway. Cause I grew up worshiping my brothers, sure. You know, as a kid does, you know, the greatest thing they gave me for sure was like, when I moved out, I was talking, I got, you know, I had a guest house I could crash in, you know, like I was able to focus on becoming a better songwriter and focus on working on that. Even though at the time I had that young buck energy thinking, oh, I was so good anyway. You know, I remember I thought, oh, I'm going to move to California, get a record deal right away, you know, thinking that. And of course that didn't happen as fast as I would have liked to, but my middle brother was a drummer in my band when we first started out and he taught me how to play drums and they turned me on to the Smiths and the Cure and all that music that influenced me so much. So it was cool. You know, my parents were very conservative. My dad was in the army and then he was a dentist for years. My mom was like a school teacher. And when they found out that I wanted to actually pursue music, because I didn't know if I wanted to, I thought I was going to go to law school. They were scared shitless. They're like, Peter can't do that. He's not going to play. You know, as any parent would be. And luckily I had my brothers in my corner who were much older than me. You know, I was like a mistake. I came out late. Like oldest brother is 9 years older and my middle brother is 6 years, but it felt like they were way older than me when I was a kid. And they luckily they found success pretty young in their careers. And so they were able to just kind of supersede my parents and say, we got them. but the, you know, like he's good.
Yeah, you guys
don't have any control now, so you can't tell him what to do. And he's actually pretty good, and he deserves a shot. So
it's actually like, mom, no, he's pretty good. He's pretty good. It's gonna be fine.
It's amazing.
It's gonna be.
I was lucky in that way for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you would have got here either way. You just happened to have, you know, a couple bros in your corner that helped you along the way. But you know, I think. The Nepo baby term often a big part of that is you have achieved success undeservedly, or you don't really do a thing, but you're famous because of your relations. But obviously you've written hundreds of amazing songs and you would have got here regardless.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I've worked my ass off of like back in the day to the point where like, oh, I'm good now. I don't know if I need to fucking tour or whatever. Yeah. I put it on the line. I mean, I spent a lot of time out there doing it, grinding it out, but in the old fashioned way, not like making a video and like a TikTok video and like expecting to like blow up, you know, like I was out there for months and months and months at a time, but it was fun and I wouldn't trade it for nothing. But I will say the whole thing, you know, sometimes, you know, it could work the other way. Like someone's like, yeah, check out my brother's music. And you're like, if you're normally like, oh, you know, like your gut instinct is to be like, oh, and so maybe it has to be even better, you know, to actually, whoa, that's fucking pretty good.
Honestly, I think that can be true. I think that absolutely can be true. I think it can go both ways. I agree.
This better be fucking good.
How did you get into the acting shit? Did somebody just call you and you were like, yeah? Or did you like audition? Like how, I mean, you obviously like movies.
Yeah, of course. Like that was, it wasn't something I was asking for or was like, oh, get me in a movie. It was,
yeah.
It happened during full on lockdown, pandemic lockdown. We were in the desert and I get an email with a bunch of people on it. Isaac emailed me and Johnny Marr together and he said, we're putting together a movie.
yeah.
He goes, no, I get an email, you know, with a bunch of people on it. They had been talking about early stages, Killers of the Flower Moon. I assume that's the only acting I've done. So you're talking about that.
Yes.
And they're like, they had a meeting and they're thinking about casting some musicians to play some of the outlaws in this movie called Killers of the Flower Moon. Mm-hmm. And they want you to read over Zoom. And I'm like, my first thing is like, whoa, what? No. Oh, I don't read. I remember lines. I can't do
first
that.
First thing, like, I don't read. I just take offers.
No, it wasn't like that. It was more like, scared to do it or whatever. Like, I can't do this. And then, they sent me some of the lines and I was like surprised that I was reading them, and right away, you know, it says like 1920s Oklahoma, and right away in my head I'm like, you know, well, it's kind of fun, you know, it's interesting. And I was able to memorize, you know, a few lines pretty easily. And so then I remember I just watched this Val Kilmer documentary, and I remember he would like always film him. He'd film himself doing practicing, you know. And I was like, well, let me try and like film and see how I do it. And I was like, oh, that's not bad. And I sent it out. I was like, here you go. And so then I got the opportunity to read over Zoom with this woman, Ellen Lewis, who's like a famous casting agent.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, long story short, I read like three different times for a couple different parts. And then I forgot about it. And then like maybe a few months later, I get a call or an email. I forget if it was a voicemail or an email. It was like, hey, Pete, it's Ellen Lewis. You got the role as AC Kirby. And I got, you know, this little part, and it's in a Scorsese movie. And I've met Marty over the years. He's been to my shows. I know him through my middle brother, Rick, who's very close with him and manages him for a long time. So no secret there. And I was like, I think the joke is, I think he liked my weird face. He likes a weird face for certain parts. And he's like, your brother Petey, he's got a weird face. He could be good for this weird expert guy. Yeah.
A character.
Listen, my gut instinct was to just every step of the way was like fighting against it. Like, I'm going to be on the cutting room floor. It's not going to happen. And just maybe to protect myself. Maybe I actually did care about it. I don't know. Or I thought it was like, you know, it just seemed inconceivable to be in a Marty Scorsese movie, you know? And so ultimately each step kept happening and getting further. And I ended up in the freaking movie, and the movie was beautiful. The movie was really sad. It really fucked me up. Stayed with me. I saw it in the theater at the Regal Theaters in Sherman Oaks at the Galleria I was talking about.
Yeah.
And I did not French exit that. And I stayed for the whole thing. And it's, I was in like this emotional soup after. I was just like, oh man, this is fucking just got me. I remember I just didn't want to, I'm like, if I'm going to be in this movie, I don't want to fuck it up. I don't want to be the one that thing that fucks up this picture and this important story. I always say I got to be in a Scorsese movie and I got to do all three amazing things you want to do in a Marty movie. I got to blow something up. I got to be in a scene with De Niro and I got whacked.
Yeah,
I checked off all the boxes.
That's top three. That really is top three.
I still can't believe it.
Suck on that, Jason Isbell.
He was great. He was great. That kid nailed it.
Yeah, yeah, he's good. I mean, it's cool. It's just cool to put people that like don't do it but can, that are recognized but not like, you know, infamous. It's just like a smart casting. It's cool, you know. It's an Easter egg for certain people.
Yeah, I remember when I went to go film, it was still pandemic-y times, and I hadn't gotten a haircut in like a year, so my hair was literally like almost like down the middle of my back.
Wow, shit.
And to go play this character, they just shaved it all off. And so, and we, it was fun. I was like I gotta film it, you know, like on like the like time lapse or whatever. And yeah, they just took it all off, and it was so liberating because I kind of had like the same, it was like a long version, but I've had like the same hairdo since like I first appeared as myself in 2001. You know, I was like, there it is. I'm like scared to change my hairdo because that's what I look like. And it was really
where liberating. The mojo comes from.
It was really liberating for them to cut it all off, and it felt nice. I came back to the hotel room and my wife saw me and she like lit up. She was like, oh my gosh, she liked it.
You guys have been together a long time. It looked like a new flavor. You know what I mean?
It was like new guy. It's like strange.
Yeah.
I was strange. Like strange.
Coming in with some new lingerie. Well, it's cool because during COVID, everyone I know kind of like shaved their head or buzzed their head or went short with their hair just out of the fact that barbershops are not open for business. My wife was buzzing my head in the backyard every month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to say, I did that because Marty asked me to. Yeah, that's why I cut my hair. And yes, everyone's
yeah,
like,
yeah, it's
not,
yeah.
I did it because I was bored during quarantine. But yeah, that's cool. So, but the hair came back. You didn't want to, are you ever going to go and chop it all off again? A little summer cut?
Listen, I don't know if I'll go that short, but I have kept it shorter since. It
gets hot in Sherman Oaks, honey.
Yeah, it does. and it's getting pretty long now again. It's very long in front.
Yeah, yeah, that's long. Yeah, I mean, look, but if you got it, flaunt it. You know what I'm saying?
For our listeners at home, he just did a Glenn Danzig style devil walk down the front. Jersey's finest.
All right, Pete, thank you for joining us. It was a blast.
Guys, thanks for having me, and congratulations on your successful podcast that I believe you started during the pandemic. I think that's right.
We did, yeah.
And it sounds like you guys are crushing it. You know, it's so awesome. So,
well, thank you.
All the best.
We appreciate it. I've been listening to your music for years, so it was fun. It was fun to chat and keep on keeping on.
All right. I'll see you all down the road.
For sure. Later, Pete. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
See you at the mall, Pete.
Yeah. And I was waiting over here. Life to begin. He's looking for the new thing.